Fitness Rugby Chat podcast is back and with an in-depth interview with Viking CEO Phil Finney. Hello and welcome to Widnes Rugby Chat. I'm James Gordon. It's episode 43 of the podcast, but the first of 2021, and indeed the first for nearly a year. I hope you're keeping well. The plan is to produce the podcast again fortnightly in 2021, trying to release by Tuesday each week, at least until the season starts, when things may go weekly again. I'm keen to make sure that the podcast is of a good a quality as it can be. Thanks to PD Law Solicitors, Arnold Gore's Financial Management, Whistle and Parklands FC for their support of the podcast. I had planned to do a bit of talking around the fixtures and squad announcements in this podcast, but we're going to go straight into what was an in-depth and wide-ranging interview with Viking CEO Phil Finney. It went on for a lot longer than I thought it would, but it's great stuff and hopefully provides you with a lot of insights to the club. We cover loads of topics, including the academy, the current financial situation at the club, the coaching changes, player recruitment, the Super League bid. There's all sorts in there, and I hope you enjoy it. Just before we get into that, I want to dedicate this podcast to Liz Hindley, who sadly passed away last year after illness. I'd known Liz for nearly 15 years through Trust in Widnes and Supporters Direct, and she was a pragmatic, level-headed and kind lady who had a genuine passion for Widnes and the community. I remember fondly sitting next to her at a game away at Hull in the last Super League season, I think it was, after a long five-hour journey in getting there, plagued by problems on the motorways. I think the supporters bus got delayed for that game as well. Rest in peace, Liz, you're very well missed. And I also want to pay tribute to Frank Johnson and his family, who've sponsored a number of players at the club for 2021 in his memory, and I'm sure that is a great comfort to them when we do finally get a chance to get to the games in 2021. So, without further delay, let's go straight into that interview with Phil Finney. So I'm joined by Widnes Chief Executive Phil Finney. Phil, thanks very much for joining us on the first podcast of the year. I mean, before we get into the serious business, how are you doing personally? Obviously, it's a bit of a weird time for everyone at the moment.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, James. And, you know, thanks for asking how I'm getting on as well. That doesn't happen very often. So, yeah, all right, mate. I think it goes without saying the last 12 months have been extremely difficult for everybody, not just Widnes Vikings and Rugby League, but right across the world, every industry, you know, has been affected. So the positive thing for us at the minute, you know, is the fact that we've got some light at the end of the tunnel now. You know, the players are back in training, the staff are back at work, and, you know, the fixtures are coming out on Sunday, hopefully. Obviously, we had the Challenge Cup draw last night, so it gives us something to look forward to now, which I think is it's been sorely missing over the past 12 months. It's the uncertainty has been really, really difficult on so many different fronts. So it's just nice to have a little bit of something to look forward to and an ability to, you know, start working towards something as well.
Yeah, and you mentioned the cup draw. We'll touch on that quickly. West Wales away, I think the first time Widnes will have played that club, actually. Certainly a new ground for the club to go to, and an interesting sort of a bit of a glamour tie, I guess, in the round with the whole Gavin Henson Rangi Chase situation.
Yeah, I mean, for the end of the day, you know, it's we had to draw someone, didn't we? As you say, like, you know, Charlotte Church's ex-fella playing, and Rangi, who's obviously, you know, was right up there in his day, wasn't he, in terms of an entertainer, got a bit of history with ourselves as well. So I did read actually somewhere that Gavin Henson claims Widnes were interested in back in the day, but I'm not entirely sure how true that is. But yeah, yeah, adds a bit of spice, I suppose, to the round. Going down there it's not going to be easy. You know, the first game we've played in over 12 months, having to travel down to West Wales, it's not going to be easy, but, you know, it's probably good preparation for the rest of the year.
Yeah, so obviously, like you say, it's a difficult time, and obviously it's nearly a year now since the last game, and of course it makes it increasingly difficult for people to engage with the club sometimes, and I know, you know, you and the staff at the club have tried the very best, you know, to keep engaging with fans over that time. But obviously it'd be good to have a bit of a chat with you about a few of the issues that have occurred over the recent months. And we'll have to start with the headline one, which is the decision to scrap the academy, which, of course, has a massive sort of link with yourself, and, you know, a lot of your time at Widnes has been dedicated to building that up. So can you just explain sort of the rationale behind the decision to scrap the academy?
Yeah, I don't want to get this interview off to a bad start here, mate, but I can't call it scrapping it, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It makes it sound like it's a, you know, bit of rubbish or something kind of thing, which in some people's eyes it may have been, but I think, you know, disbanding the academy is you know, what we had to do. And now, of course, you know, I don't mind explaining the rationale behind it whatsoever, and, you know, I thank you for the opportunity to explain this as well, because, you know, naturally it's been a big part of the club for a long, long time, and coming to the decision that we had to just before Christmas, you know, I'd like the opportunity to sort of explain it a little bit, so I hope you've got some time. But, mate, firstly, it was such a very complex decision-making process that went on for a really prolonged period of time, and it wasn't a decision that was made lightly by anyone at all, you know, certainly not myself, and it wasn't a decision that was made overnight. But ultimately, you know, you've got to look at what the purpose of an academy is, you know, and is an academy doing what it says in Latin? And, you know, from a club point of view, and certainly from our point of view, the purpose of an academy, and it always was to, you know, identify young players with the most potential that we thought who could become adult professional rugby league players, and at the time, you know, Super League players. And obviously, in terms of, there's an awful lot of work that goes into that, in terms of the identification of those players, the recruitment of them, the development, the retention of them, and then the transition along the journey from scholars right the way through to academy, through to reserves, you know, when that was in place, and then through to the first team. Now, that was our view on it. Now, the governing body would look at it slightly differently, and Super League were looking at it slightly differently, in that their sort of, I suppose, purpose of an academy, or their definition of what an academy should have been doing, or objective, was to develop players for Super League, and obviously players available for England or, you know, Great Britain. So that's where they were coming from, and obviously the Super League were holding the purse strings on that. And so they're the, you know, that was what an academy is supposed to be about. And there was two main reasons for us, James, where we ended up making the decision that we did to disband the programme, and it was financial. I've got to be honest, there's a financial implication to it, and hopefully I'll explain this now. And the other one was a moral one. You know, we had to look at it from all angles, but, you know, we had to look at it from a moral perspective to, you know, to see whether we were doing the right thing by the players that we had involved in the programme, the staff that were involved in the programme, and the wider game as well. So they're the two things, and I'd just like to explain, if I can, that, you know, how the finances worked around the academy. I don't know whether you know, but the academies are funded through obviously the broadcast deal through Super League. Now, every academy, every Category 1 academy got £100,000 of base funding. And in addition to the base funding, depending on how productive you were, you got a share of, like a reward pot, if you like. So back in 2019, just after admin, we were still, you know, running a Category 1 academy, and we were getting £100,000 of base funding, we were getting £80,000 of reward funding, and that was based on historical data from years before. As I think everybody knows, the Super League clubs decided, with no consultation with ourselves, to take that £80,000 away from our distributions, which then left us with £100,000. So that gives you a bit of an insight straight away into some of the challenges that we've faced since administration, and how the decision to disband the academy, you know, the origins of that, you know, go back to that point.
I remember at one of the fundraising evenings, that was Terry O'Connor, I think, announced it on the stage, didn't he? Was that the was 70 or 80 grand raised, was that to cover that space that the Super League clubs took away at that time? Is that right? Am I getting that right?
No, we didn't know at the time.
Right.
We didn't know at the time, James. We only found out about that money being withdrawn from our distributions after the club had been bought.
Right.
So the decision to retain the academy throughout administration was based upon us retaining the level of funding that we were getting, only to find out after the event that it was going to be withdrawn. So, you know, that's, hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it? But, you know, we made that decision at the time with the information that we had. But the way it works is that whatever funding you get from the centre or Super League for your academy, you're supposed to match that one-to-one. Right. So for us in that year, you know, we're getting £180,000. We're supposed to match it one-to-one, take that up to £360,000. Now, what that can't include is player wages. So if you think about, you've got potentially between 25 and 30 academy lads. You may have some reserves in there. Your costs could be anywhere between £100,000, £150,000 for just your academy players and reserve players alone, which could take your spend. Could take you spend up to £500,000.
Mm.
So it's you can see there straight away, it's a lot of money to run an academy programme. Now when we were in Super League, when the previous sort of CEO came into post, I remember having he had a really frank conversation with myself about, you know, the financial challenges of running an academy and could we make it possible to try and offset some of that additional cost that you've got to match on top of obviously the money that you get from your distribution. So we went about implementing a series of initiatives. You know, we ran the Advanced Apprenticeship in Sport and Excellence. We ran Level 3 BTEC National Diplomas for the players. And what that did, it allowed us to almost make the academy self-financing with those programmes that we ran. And the club didn't have to put an awful lot of money in at that time. And I think that point is a really important point to note, that we've never had a lot of funding put into our academy. We've had to, everything that we've had, we've had to go out and earn it ourselves, kind of thing, whether that was through making sure our reward money from Super League was high because of our productivity, or, you know, as I say, implemented a number of education initiatives and sponsorship initiatives to try and meet that cost, and that's what we did. And, you know, we were quite proud about that. And to give you an insight, back in 250,000 alone on staff. So we had, you know, we had five members of staff, full time members of staff, dedicated to working, you know, with the academy. Obviously, you know, I was one of them at the time.
You were the 100. You were on 100k, and the others were on 10k.
Look, your maths aren't very good, mate. That's 140, so
there's
on 12 and a half.
Just on that point, though, so you mentioned the 300, the match one-to-one would equal 360, and you say players can't be part of that. I guess the staff can be part of the 360, is that right?
Yeah, so within that 360, you've got things like staff salaries, facility hire, medical bills, transport, kit, supplements, all that type of stuff can be included in that. Now, what you've got to remember is, because we were running a full-time programme, which most Super League clubs, and I think it's unbelievable to be fair, most Super League clubs don't run a full-time programme. The lads come and they train part-time at night, and they do whatever else they want in the day. Now, for many, many reasons other than the finances, we thought it was really important to have our lads in full time to make up the ground maybe with some of the players that we had in relation to players that may have been at Wigan or Warrington or Settlers or Leeds or whatever. So yeah, our boys were full time. Now, obviously, being full time, you've got to pay staff to come in and deliver programmes to those lads while they're in. But to bring it like into context now, that expected level of spend on a Category 1 academy at that time, and I can't get into the details of exactly what we get now, but that was more than we currently get in distributions from the Rugby League to run the whole club as it stands. You know, so there is a financial implication with the decision. But the next part of it was definitely a moral one, James. Now, when I started at the club, you know, I the reason I got involved and the reason why we tried to develop the academy was nothing other than to try to give lads an opportunity to play rugby and to play first team, to become professional athletes, you know what I mean? And we put an awful lot of effort into that. We didn't get it right all the time. We dropped a number of clangers, and we were learning, you know, we were learning as we were going, and, you know, we were trying to evolve it as we went. But one of the things that we always wanted to make sure was that we did things with integrity, and we did things in the right way, because ultimately you're taking somebody's kids. You're taking somebody's kids and you're putting them on the pathway that, as I said at the start, it's got to do what it says on the tin. You've got to get those kids and you've got to put them into an environment and a program that gives them every available opportunity to fulfil their potential. So we took that job really seriously. The quality of the staff that we had with those players and the time that we put into those players was really, really important to us. You know, we were educating the players as well. You know, the vast majority, and I don't care what other clubs say, I'm really not interested what they say. They can do what they want. We had to find a way to make it work for us. So we had lads who, you know, back in the day when I started, we had lads who were supposed to be doing A-levels, they were supposed to be doing apprenticeships. James, they were failing at both, because when they're in college, all that they can do is, they're just waiting to come training. Mm. When they get to training, they're not really fit for anything, because they've been messing around in college, trying to pull birds, eating out the vending machine, whatever it is. They come to us at training at night, you know, 6 o'clock, and they're fit for nothing. So, you know, there's been an argument, and we've been accused in the past of, you know, not doing the right thing by players. But ultimately, we had players that were accruing UCAS points. We were taking lads and putting them in an environment where they were actually learning. We had players that hadn't passed the maths and English. We were paying for them to do resits with St. Peter and Paul College. So we were taking that really seriously, knowing full well that an awful lot of players don't get through. They don't have a career in rugby. So we didn't want their experience with us as a club to be hamstrung, or the future life, you know, to be limited by what they've done with us. So that was something that was really, really, really important to us. Now, a couple of things happened just before admin. One thing happened before admin. The advanced apprenticeship in sport and excellence stopped. So the funding dried up from that. And then first year into admin, St. Peter and Paul decided to shut down the college. So there was no education provided for our players anymore. And that put another financial sort of stress on the academy environment. But the other part of it, which, you know, was a very difficult thing for us to start to talk about, was, well, actually, are we, as it stands, are we able to provide the lads with the environment they need? Is our pathway leading to Super League and giving them an opportunity to go from Super League to become an international player? And in all honesty, the answer was no.
And I guess that's because of the full-time, part-time thing, I guess, more so than anything else.
Of course, yeah. You know, you're a part-time first team. You then revert to being a part-time academy programme. Now, you've got to remember that the objectives from the RFL and Super League are to develop players for Super League, not for a part-time championship environment. So we'd had our resources reduced, and we had, you know, we had a number of lads, you know, Ryan O'Brien being the main one out of the group, who was literally, James, working 7 days a week, working his fingers to the bone to keep it going. And when we sat down and said, are we doing what an academy is there to do? Are we giving these the lads the best chance we possibly can to become a Super League player? And the answer was no. You know, when we were in Super League, James, we as I said, we had a well-staffed academy. They were full-time, and it was still really difficult for us to go head-to-head with Settlings or Wigan to try and recruit a 14-year-old. That's the Widnes lads. Mm. You know, the Widnes lads who've grown up in Widnes, been inspired to play rugby by Widnes Vikings as kids, but then when they get to 14, you know, they then, you know, these other clubs come in and court them and whatever else. And at the time, James, I used to be furious with it, do you know what I mean? But now I can look back and think, well, you can understand why their heads were turned. You know, do you go to witness Vikings who, like I've said previously, you know, that last year in Super League, we won, I think it was 3 games out of 21. How can you expect the parent to look at that and go, yeah, yeah? Because they don't look at your academy. Mm. They look at your first team. That's what they look at. So it was very, very difficult at that time to recruit players. And we, you know what? We didn't grumble about that. We developed a solution for ourselves. You know what? What we'll do is we won't compete for what you'd probably call first pick players. We'll have a go at the first pick witness lads. If we don't get them, then we go to what would wrongly be considered second, third pick, fourth pick or whatever. The lads that have got the most potential long term. Now, that was difficult in Super League. How difficult is that going to be when you're a part-time championship team?
Mm.
You know, that was a question. And that was really, for me, the biggest factor in the decision, that we couldn't honestly sit down in front of parents, sit down in front of lads and promise them that we could do the very best by those players and give them everything that they need to, because we'd gone from a place where I'd started and the academy wasn't in the best shape, and there was a lot of people that came in and helped out, and Steve O'Connor resourced it and everything. And so to go from where we were, you know, as I say, we get to a Category 1 status, we were outstanding, we were classed as an outstanding academy, you know, before Warrington were outstanding, before, no, Leeds weren't outstanding, we were outstanding. And so to go from that to then, you know, like a shell of what it once was really, really difficult. So that was certainly part of the decision making. And then the last part of it, James, is that the academy licences are linked to the broadcast deal. So all of the academy licences, they actually run out at the end of 2021. So there will be some sort of process. I don't know what it is anymore. You know, we're now not part of that group. But at some point, each club would have been invited to apply to run an academy as part of their club. Now, we all know that there's question marks over what the broadcast deal is going to look like, how much funding is going to be available to the first team. If that's significantly affected, you can be fairly certain that the money that comes down to the academies is going to be affected as well. After what had happened in 2019 with the reward funding taken off us, to be quite frank, I've got no faith in that process. I've got no faith, irrespective of how good we may have been or how productive we may have been or the opportunities that we've given to players to progress. I would have no faith in the decision-making process behind that. So, you know, that again went into the mix, and as I say at the start, the very sort of complex decision-making process that we had to make eventually. So,
I mean, that
gives a bit of insight.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so yeah, great to have that insight, and thanks for that. Do you think that it is a problem with the approach of the academy that it's so focused on generating elite-level players? Because surely, you know, generating... Because like, where are the part-time clubs, for instance, going to go for players if people are just encouraged to bring through elite players and there's no volume?
It's a multi sort of faceted question, isn't it, James? I think... I would honestly say that kids aren't elite. Mm. Kids aren't elite. 14, you're not an elite player. There's very few. You know, I've been involved a long time now. You know, from when I was a kid myself, to then working within academy environments. Prior to that, working for the RFL, identifying kids as an analyst. And you know, honestly, I remember my age group. Kev Sinfield, he was the one. Do you know what I mean? He was unbelievable. You could look at him and go, "Do you know what? He's gonna get through. He'll get through him." After that, then, you know, John Bateman. You know, I remember working on a camp. John Bateman was on this camp. He was just, oh, he was a freak. Do you know what I mean? You look at him, think, yeah. Do you know what? Yeah, he. Sam Burgess, the same. Lewis Dodd is the next one for me. Lewis Dodd will get through, but there's not that many of them, James. And it goes back to your question there. The volume doesn't exist anymore. And this is a huge, huge challenge for rugby league as a sport and for all the individual clubs to try and address. The volume of players that are playing the game is getting smaller and smaller, and therefore that group of what people may call elite or who are accessing academy environments, it's getting smaller and smaller all the time, so therefore the quality is going down. The challenge that we've got is to, in my view, is to address the system. If you go back, and we go back to what I said at the start, your academy environment is there to identify players, to enter your system, who've got the potential to become Super League players. Now, it's a very crude measure, this, but I simply think you look at, according to the Super League, well, what happened to Great Britain? Hmm. What happened to Great Britain in 2019? We got beat by Tonga, got beat by New Zealand, which I don't think there's any shame in that, and we got beat by Papua New Guinea. I grew up watching Great Britain tonk Papua New Guinea.
Hmm.
They used to come over here and we used to absolutely tonk them, and now we're getting beat by them. We've got Blake Austin, Lachlan Coote, Jackson Hazen. I've got nothing against them, but they're playing for Great Britain. Now, that's an indicator that clearly there's no trust in the players that are coming through academy programmes. You know, a lot of those players are also playing NRL. They're not playing Super League. So, you know, we've got to seriously ask some tough questions of academy environments, and are they doing what it says on the tin? You know, and I'd have to say, across the board, they're not. You know, some clubs do a great job. Everybody's got their own unique challenges, which is great. And it's up to those clubs to deal with those unique challenges and get around them. But, you know, across the board, I think you'd have to say it's an abject failure.
Hmm. I mean, how sad was it for you personally to, you know, once you'd got to that decision that you were going to disband it? I mean, you know, it must be gut-wrenching to see sort of 10, 15 years hard work on something, basically just the tap gets turned off.
Yeah. Do you know what, James? I spoke to you privately before about this, and, you know, I think you were very, very brave coming out and discussing some of, you know, your challenges. And, you know, I've got no shame, you know, and I'm not looking for sympathy when I say this, but it was the most difficult decision I've ever had to make. And I don't just mean professionally, I mean personally. In my life, that was the most difficult decision I've ever had to come to. That 18th of December, you know, we made the announcement on the 18th of December. And honestly, James, it was dark. It was dark, not literally dark. It was probably dark outside. But,
I was going to say, is it ruining your Christmas?
Well, I'll get to it, mate. it was tough, mate. It was proper tough. There was people involved that I, you know, seriously, you know, cared for. Spent a lot of time with, seeing them grow up, seeing them develop through it. You know, and it got to that day, and I was physically sick. I was physically sick on that day. I couldn't sleep. I don't sleep very well anyway, but I got up and I rung Ryan O'Brien, and I was in tears, James. I literally couldn't speak to him. And how embarrassing is that for him to have me on the other end of the phone? Like, so I just couldn't get my words out. I eventually had a conversation with him. I tried that day to ring and thank all the people that had been involved, indirectly or directly, with the academy. The next one was Liam Clark, who, you know, most people know Clark. He's passing himself off now as some sort of, like, well-being guru and all this, working up at Cronton College. But I rung him, and exactly the same happened. You know, I started crying. I couldn't speak to him. And to be fair, it won't surprise, you know, the vast majority of Widnes fans have probably either seen me crying going through admin, or the day after we got beat at Wembley, I started crying then. So it's not unusual for me to shed a few tears, but, you know, it was a horrible, horrible time. At the time, in the 18th of December, that was another issue. It was like, oh, do we do it before Christmas or do we do it after Christmas? And, well, if you do it after Christmas, people will be thinking, well, you knew about that all along and you should have told us. And it was one of them. You couldn't do sort of right for doing wrong. And we decided to do, you know, make that decision then. You know, because I work in rugby league, I haven't got some sort of armour, you know what I mean? I'm a human being. I get personally affected by things, and that decision and some of the response and reaction to it, you know, it hurt. You know what I mean? And it wasn't easy to deal with at all. And I think that one of the challenges, James, for me was the decision that we had to make and I had to make completely contradicts what I actually believe in as a person. And that's where the conflict comes from, you know, the mental conflict and everything. That's where that comes from. I've got no issue sitting down with a player and saying there's no contract there for you. I've got no issue doing that whatsoever, because he'll have demonstrated in the time that he's been with us whether he deserves one or he doesn't deserve one. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But when something's so fundamental to your belief system, i.e. giving kids an opportunity to play rugby, and it's so integral, but then you can't do that. But we had to do. I had to make that decision because it was actually the right thing to do. It was a head v heart sort of decision, and we had to use our heads, because the long term future of the club can't be jeopardised by sentiment, unfortunately. No.
Yeah, and I think it was partly difficult because obviously the academy's almost been a shining light of recent years. You know, I've flagged it up on many occasions, you know, the number of academy products that have been in the first team, and, you know, obviously you had the Club 20 thing. And I suppose that's where a lot of the frustration stems from people, because that was almost like, you know, everyone talks about they want fashionable places and fashionable teams in the competition. But ultimately, if you've got a good academy and you're producing players, you're actually, you know, it feels like you're adding something. Do you know what I mean? And that's, I suppose, that's the concern. But you must take some solace, I suppose, now from the number of products of the academy that are going to be playing in Super League. Obviously, we know Matt Whitley's doing great at Catalan. You know, of course, Danny Walker's gone to Warrington. But even like Dan Norman's got the gig at St. Helens. Ollie Ashore-Bott's gone to Huddersfield. You know, Jordan Johnston's at Hull. Brad Walker is surely going to have a breakout year at Wakefield this year. I mean, you must take some pride out of that.
Now, do you know what, mate? The other difficult part of it was the fact that we were only just getting started.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That group of players that you just talked about, if you look at the age profile of those players, they're between sort of like 20 years of age and 24. You know, they were the lads that, you know, 10 years ago we started to work with. And you know, they were the ones where we felt that the environment that we created had helped to develop those lads. So could you imagine what would have come in the next wave? From a club point of view and from my point of view, and I've said this before, I'm really proud that we have made some sort of contribution to the development of all those players, whether they're playing first team, you know, Super League, whether in the Championship. There's a lot of our lads in the Championship as well. There's some in League One. Some of them not playing, but are great lads. And when you see them, you know, you have a good chat with them, and they're really good lads. But I think, James, for the club to try to take too much credit, I think it is wrong. You know what I mean? There's we recruit players because, you know, they're okay at rugby. So naturally, before we got involved with them, there would have been a community club coach, would have been a PE teacher, a parent, an older brother, whatever, that's done a good job. And then after the academy, you go into your first team environment, and you know, and I wrote some names down here, like, you know, someone like Christine, like, you know, quite a bit of a grey man, do you know what I mean? Like, just gets on with his business, but the way he sort of mentored some of our younger players, and probably didn't even know he was doing it. Do you know what I mean? Just really supportive of them. His actions demonstrated the right way. Kev Brown, like, I would honestly say Matt Whitley's progression and development was at the club was largely down to Kev Brown. You know, we give him an opportunity, give him a platform. Matt had to take it. When he got in the first team, Kev took him under his wing. He used to bring him into training, you know, and Kev was an ultimate competitor kind of thing. So his actions, again, helped a lot of those young kids. Willie Isa, who, you know, Willie helped to develop Matt, helped to develop the twins, you know, Danny Walker. All he had an awful lot of involvement with the scholarship program when he was at the club and the academy lads. So that, you know, there's an awful lot of people that go into making contributions to the development of these lads' careers. And you know, I'm proud, and I think Widnes should be proud that we've given a lot of these lads a platform. And that's where a lot of those lads that you've named there, and you know, I look myself, did the same job you obviously just done there, and there's only Wigan and Hull KR, from what I can see, who haven't got a player in their first team environment that's actually been in our academy environment. Now, in addition to lads that have been in our academy environment, look at Widnes as a town as well, and you think, well, hang on, like, there's a legacy being left by the success of Widnes historically. It's been passed down from granddad to dad to son. So you've got Harry Smith at Wigan. Harry Smith was involved in our development squad that was led by Roger Harrison. We did everything we could to keep Harry. He chose a decision to go to Wigan. You know, he's playing Super League now. That's worked out for him. You've got Percy, who's at Saints, obviously a Widnes lad, inspired to play rugby because of, you know, he's a Widnes lad. His family have played Widnes. His brother played for Widnes. You know, he chose to go to Saints. You've got Doddy at Saints, unbelievable talent. We did everything. We pulled out everything to try and keep Doddy at Widnes. You know, you can't blame him. You've got Alex Sutton at Wigan as well. So it's not just Widnes as a club, it's Widnes as a town. You know what I mean? It's been a breeding ground for rugby players, and it's something that we're in danger of losing.
Yeah.
If as a club and as a community, and that includes the council, it includes the schools, it includes the community, we're in danger of losing that part of the town, and we've got to desperately avoid that at all costs.
Yeah, I was going to say, what does the pathway look like now for sort of young kids? So if there's a, you know, if there's any 8-year-old lads who listen to the podcast, or their mum and dad's listening, they're thinking, well, you know, they support Widnes and they want to play for Widnes, but now there's no academy. You know, what's the pathway for them actually getting to play for Widnes now?
Yeah, well, do you know what? I think we've got a unique opportunity, Jim, because when you've got a pathway, it might sound a bit strange, this, but it's actually restrictive.
Yeah, because you're quite rigid to it rather than...
You're limited. You're limited, so no. You can recruit players you can recruit them into your under 15s. So you start looking at under 13s, under 14s, kind of thing. That's the age where scouts go out. They start looking. And by the way, you know, I've got to make a comment on that. How that is done is completely immoral, unethical. How kids are recruited at that age group, and that has a huge impact on the volume of players that are playing the sport. We've been part of that as well. So I'm not saying that we haven't been part of that. We have been part of that. But when you get them at under 15s, you're allowed 20. And the RFL, a while back, made a decision. And this wasn't necessarily RFL. It was the clubs who were influencing this decision. You used to have to have a certain quota of players that came from your town.
Right.
So which actually incentivised clubs to go into primary schools, incentivise clubs to work with secondary school, to go into community clubs, to work with their coaches, to try and make the kids as good as you could possibly be. The RFL scrapped that quota and just said, right, you can have 20 kids from wherever you want to have them. Wherever you want to have them. So, St Helens, Wigan, Warrington, Leeds over in Yorkshire, whatever, could go and camp at Wilmere Lane, right, and just go, right, we're taking 9 Widnes kids. We're going to have a go at 9 Widnes kids. And I think that was a fundamental mistake from the RFL, because it didn't, you know, clubs were no longer incentivised to look at lads within their own town. And we started to lose that identity, you know, people identifying, you know what, I'm a Widnes lad, I want to play for Widnes, I'm a Wigan lad, I want to play for Wigan. I'm sure Wigan lads still do want to play for Wigan.
Yeah.
But do you know what I'm saying? There's been some decisions made that have really, I think, negatively impinged upon the volume of players at community, but also the pathway as well. So when in the pathway, James, you play scholarship games, right? And if you're a coach, right, you want to win games, right? It's bragging rights. But when it's about the development of young players, some people may disagree with me, but I'll stick to my guns on this. It isn't about winning games. It's about giving them the appropriate development pathway that leads to them fulfilling their potential. Now, I would suggest they win as many as they lose, because you've got to see what they're like when they win, and you've got to see how they respond when they lose. If they respond when they lose, you know, do they jack it in? Do you know what's too hard? This, you know, you've got to test to see whether there's any resilience. Can they cope with adversity? Do they come back? Now, when you stick games in, and you say, right, it's Wigan v Saints, it's not about development. It's about bragging rights. So therefore, the scouts are looking for the biggest and perceived to be the best kid when they're 13, 14. The reality is the biggest and best kid when they're 13 was born in September, full on beard. By the time he's 16, he's 5'8", he's done, he's finished, right? Doesn't go on and have a career. Mm. So there's two sides to this. We're recruiting lads because of the pathway, the way the pathway is designed, that are never going to be Super League players, but they help you win a game at under-16s, which is, you know, no one ever remembers who's won a game at 16s, mm. right? And we're missing out on the lads that maybe may have only picked the rugby ball up 6 months before, but bear in mind, they're 13 years of age.
Yeah.
Like, by the time they get to 16, 17, 18, they could be 6'2", you know, built like the proverbial brick outhouse kind of thing, right? But they don't get into the system, you know what I mean? And then they give up.
I think Jamie Peacock, I mean, I do a bit of work with Jamie Peacock and obviously interviewed him many times over the years, and he's a good example of someone. I don't think he came through till he was like 21, 22. And he ended up winning, I think he's got 11 Super League winners rings, you know. And
yeah, I had the unfortunate experience of playing against him when he was at Bradford Reserves, and he was just horrible, you know, he's just a horrible, raw-boned creature kind of thing. And there are so many out there, you know, that you just said there. You know, I was thinking this morning about this conversation, and, you know, back in the day, like, you know, I'm 40 now, so we're going back 25 years here, James. When lads used to sign for professional clubs back in the day, they didn't enter the system until they left school.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So lads were getting picked up at sort of 14, 15, but you didn't actually have any involvement with the club, really. You know, I was at Warrington, and you'd get invited in the summer holidays for a couple of days and whatever else, and you didn't actually do anything properly until you left school. And look at the players that came. I don't think there's any more players now coming through to play first team or Super League versus when you know, back in 1997, 1998, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I suppose the impact of that is the damage it's done to community clubs, I guess. Because I know we had a little bit of a chat about this the other week, where, you know, kids are signing for clubs at 14, and then when they're getting discarded at 16, they're just lost to the game, rather than, you know, maybe if they'd have carried on. If they don't get signed at 16, they'll carry on playing for West Bank or whoever it might be.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's such a complex issue that we're talking about here, in that, you know, we can look back with rose-tinted glasses on what it was like when I was a kid, and, you know, we had Halton Hornets, we had Lunteath Lions, you had Widnes Tigers, Widnes St Mary's, four teams, you know, each age group and all that type of stuff. The reality is, you know, when I was growing up, there wasn't, what could you do on a Sunday?
Mm.
What, you know what I mean? There was no Premier League footy on the telly. You know, there was no iPads, there was no Instagram, there was no Amazon Prime. Like, it was literally, you know, watching Little House on the Prairie or something, do you know what I mean? So when I was a kid, I'd go and play for the Hornets in the morning, and I'd go and watch Widnes with my dad in the afternoon, and then I'd have my Sunday dinner when I got home. That was it. Do you know what I mean? Now, The challenge, do you want to go to Wilmot Lane, right, and go up against some monster from Waterhead who's going to trample all over you? Or would you rather, do you know what, I'll go and play some virtual game at home in the comfort of my own room, you know what I mean, whilst I'm on Facebook or whatever else. It's, the sport is still very, very hard. Mm. Like, physical, hard sport to play, but society around it is completely different. So I think it's multifaceted. We've got the changes in society that are going on. We've also got, as you said, there is an impact from the professional game on the community game. You know, every single, you know, professional player at some point has played in the community game. So the community game does a great job, but the community game doesn't exist to serve the professional game. The community game, right, is there, you know, I think in its purest sense, is to give people the opportunity to participate in the rugby league, to have fun. The agendas, the two agendas don't match up at times, kind of thing. So it's definitely something that needs addressing, because I've seen it in Widnes myself, and this is, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of community clubs that could probably make improvements. You know, the same way there's a lot of professional clubs that need to make a lot of improvements as well. But we need a collective approach to how we improve the game as a whole, and that's got to come. That's got to come from the rugby league.
Yeah. Do you, as does the club at the moment have any sort of plans to engage a bit more with the community clubs in Widnes?
Well, do you know what, James? I think it starts. I think it starts before the community clubs. I think if you get to the community clubs, it's a little bit like us as a club. You know, so this will give you a bit of an insight into how we're thinking at the minute. As a club, I think we're quite good. We could probably get better and make some improvements, but we're quite good at preaching to our fans. Not preaching, that was the wrong word. Communicating with our fans. Preaching was the old lot. Communicating with our existing supporters. Frankly, we're not good at communicating with potential new supporters. Mm. So if we go into the community clubs, you've got people that are already playing rugby league, right? But it's a very small number. Our challenge, I think, and you might have seen something that we've launched this week that's going to launch properly next week. We've launched an activity programme with the schools, with the primary schools. So we've got 50 schools in Holton, give or take. There's about 10,000 primary school age kids in the borough, right? As a club, we've only got 150 season ticket holders from that primary school age group, which is damning. That is a really damning thing, and something very concerning about, you know, 20, 30 years down the line, who's going to be supporting Widnes Vikings if we don't address that now? So we've launched a completely free online physical activity programme that's going to be led by Shane Grady, so God help everybody. Shane Grady, Jack Owens, Matt Cook's going to be involved in it. A few others are going to come and help out. And so there's three sessions a week that the kids in the schools can access. We're going to put it on our YouTube channels as well, so anybody can get involved with it.
Yeah.
And it's a very small first step to trying to do what you've just said, trying to engage with more kids. If we can engage with more kids and get more kids loving, it's not just rugby league, James.
Like health and lifestyle, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, some of our best players, James, didn't play rugby when they were at primary school. They played football. Jack Owens was a footballer. Do you know what I mean?
Well, Matty Smith was one who I think he was at Everton, wasn't he? I think, and decided.
He claims he was at. Well, decided. You mean he didn't get through, so he decided to go to rugby.
Well, yeah. I presume no sane person's choosing to play rugby over football. Given the financial differences.
Steve Tyrer was a keeper as well, I think. I think I'm right, he'll tell you if I'm wrong, but I'm sure he was at Wigan Athletic as a kid. So our challenge, if we can get as many kids to be positive about adopting a healthy and a physical sort of lifestyle, become active, eat right, all that type of stuff, then if we can get that going, then we can start to signpost them into community clubs. You know what I mean? We can then start to do that. And I think that's probably the role that we can play. And then, of course, like if we can help the community clubs as well, whether that's through, for example, you know, a bit of coach development, whether that's through Simon, whether it's through Ryan, other people that we've got connections with who can help them, then we're up for doing that. Do you know what I mean? We've got a great opportunity now to press the reset button kind of thing and decide, what do we want to be as a club? And the first thing is we have to engage with more supporters. James, the last 12 months, it's been phenomenal in terms of the loyalty, again, that has been demonstrated towards the club from both our season ticket holders and our commercial partners. We've got to do everything we can to get as many of those supporters and increase those supporters, whether it's a season ticket holder, whether it's someone that, you know, may walk up, buy tickets, whatever it might be, whether it's commercial partners, we've got to get as many of them as we can from our town, because it's the people within the town. It's none of these, you know, multinationals and all that type of stuff. It's people within the town who've got a connection with the club that have kept us going.
Yeah. And just before we move on from the academy chatter, if the RFL or if Rugby League generally reviews what it does at academy is, Will it be on the agenda that Widnes could restart the academy at a later date, or is that not something you've thought about?
No, I've thought about it, James. You know, I've thought about it long and hard, and it is something that, you know, I'm not just saying this now because it's convenient, but because we've had to look at it differently now, we believe that there's probably a different model of how to run an academy moving forward, and it wouldn't be as restrictive as the current pathway is. Do you know what I mean? So 100% would we like to have an academy again in the future? definitely. Do you know what I mean? Because the pride you get when those lads come through and play for your first team, and more importantly, what it means to those players as well, I think you quoted to me, James, that I think it was Wigan, St. Helens, Leeds, you know, the number of academy players that were in their teams when they were in grand finals. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's this, you know, it's no fluke. Do you know what I mean? There's no fluke that those lads that come through your programme, I think it means a lot more to those players than it does to an overseas player that comes over and plays. You know, I had to sit in front of Danny Walker, Jordan Johnston, Matt Whitley, these players that genuinely didn't want to leave the club.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Didn't want to leave. You know, they're in tears. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
Jordan Johnston was, like, Danny Walker was buzzing because obviously he's on a good screw. Danny Walker now, like. But yeah.
Was that because Jordan Johnston had to move to Hull? Is that why he was crying?
I don't know. I think it's because we just put up with him, didn't we? Yeah. Pulled down from Whitehaven, a little fat mess, and
when he wore 53 or whatever it was in a pre-season friendly, and he was kicking off. I remember that one.
Mate, do you know what, mate? If he hadn't have gone off at Wembley, we would have won.
Yeah.
But
it is what it is. I can tell you're not bitter about that. Anyway.
We haven't had a chance to play them since. So.
Yeah, true. Thanks anyway for that insight into the academy, Phil. I hope everyone listening has found it interesting and provides a bit more background. Let's move on a little bit to talking about the club in more general terms. And I suppose everyone wants to know what the current situation of the club is. Obviously, with COVID and stuff like that, is the club stable? Is it struggling? Where is it at?
Do you know what, mate? I don't want to come out with any bold, ridiculous statements because I know what that can sort of lead to. Like, at the moment, we're doing well. We're doing well. 2019, James, was an absolute disaster of a year. We were finding our feet. We were having to, you know, pay old debts and all sorts of stuff. It was a crazy year. 2020 was supposed to be the year where we were, you know, laying foundations, and obviously COVID came along. What it's allowed us to do, James, is like really work on the business behind the scenes. We're in a position now whereby, you know, we've taken advantage as much as we possibly could, you know, of the furlough scheme. I don't think there's any shame in saying that. I think it was a sensible thing to do for us. So we have actually minimised our expenditure, you know, an awful lot over the last 10 months or so. As I alluded to before, the season ticket holders, I think we had 11% of season ticket holders asked for a refund. Now, I've got absolutely no qualms over that. You know, it's been a difficult time for people. Some people have been obviously seriously financially affected. But 11%, I think, you know, 89% of people left the money in the club or donated the money back to the club, which was phenomenal. We didn't have one commercial partner who asked for a refund. There wasn't one commercial partner that asked us for a refund. And I thought, do you know what? That speaks volumes of the people that support this club. You know what I mean? They were well within the right to ask for the money back.
And to be fair, it's testament to the transparency and of your operation and the board at the club now and how people have got trust in that.
Yeah, definitely. And that's all we can be. You know, all that we can do is tell the truth. Now, there's certain information that obviously we can. You know, it's confidential information. You know, if you go and shop at, you probably shop at Waitrose or Boozoo, don't you? But those people who shop at Aldi and Morrison's or wherever, even though you shop there and you give them 150, 200 quid a week, you're not entitled to understand some of the decision-making processes that go on there.
Mm.
But with sport, people feel like it's illogical, isn't it? The whole sport is illogical. We all know that.
Mm.
People feel like, you know, they're entitled to every little bit of information. Now, we will give out the information that we can do. You know, as long as that isn't sort of breaching confidentiality or exposing certain situations that we shouldn't, we will be as transparent as we possibly can be. We said that at the very start, and I'd like to think we've continued in that vein. And I do think that goes a long way in terms of retaining your sponsors, retaining your supporters, As I said before, our challenge now, James, is to get more people to feel that passion about the club. We've got to try and engender that in more and more people. So, where we are at the minute, it's good. You know, we had some conversations in the summer, you know, with kit sponsors. You can imagine our kit comes from China. It has to be, the design has to be done, the sponsors have to be done, it has to be signed off really early doors. So in the middle of the first lockdown, global pandemic, we're ringing sponsors asking them, do you want to be on the kit again?
And, you know, but we've won five times.
Oh, mate, I'm having sleepless nights thinking, how do I ring someone? Like, a lot of these people, by the way, supported us through admin as well.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, how do I ring these people and have these conversations with them? And honestly, every single one of them were brilliant with us. They were absolutely brilliant with us. So, you know, you normally have 11 sponsors on your kit. You know, we haven't got 11, we've got 9. Out of those 9, 7 of them have renewed.
Mm.
You know what I mean? 2 of them that haven't been able to renew as a kit sponsor, but have remained as a player sponsor or another sponsor, whether it's digital or a board or whatever it might be.
Mm.
So, you know, that really, you know, it fills you with some pride, you know what I mean? That other people feel about the club the way I feel about the club and other people within the staff feel about the club. So, you know, the biggest thing, you know, was getting the lads back in training.
Hmm.
You know, we started in December, and the boys came back in, and we were only allowed to train twice a week to begin with, which was fine because they hadn't been training for so long with us. So they came back in. Simon's new, Ryan's new to his role. Obviously, we've got all sorts of mad COVID protocols we've got to adhere to, and quite rightly so as well.
Yeah.
So we had to get used to all that. Come back after Christmas, we were allowed to start doing the lateral flow testing, which allows us then to train 3 times a week, and we did one session, and then we went into lockdown again. So the boys come back in, I think it was the start of last week. They started back first Monday in February it was, so they've done nearly 2 weeks now, and you know, the lads have been, you know, back in, and I think they're enjoying themselves, they're enjoying the sort of new players to the group, you know, who've joined the club. I think Simon and Ryan, you know, that's different for them as well. So, yeah, at the moment, we're quite happy with where the club is. We're just about to put an advert out for a new commercial partnerships manager, so that'll go out. We've introduced a couple of new staff to the first team to help out there. So, yeah, you know, we're optimistic at the moment. I mean, I've got a sort of caveat that with the, we have no idea what next year is going to look like.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
We still don't know. But as it stands, you know, we are in a good position, but we've just got to be very, very careful that we don't take that for granted, and, you know, we come unstuck back end of the year if there's no games in front of crowds and all that. We've got to be sensible about everything.
You mentioned the commercial manager there. I'll have to mention Dave Roll, who I understand left the club. I presume he's sunning himself in a villa in Spain or something full time now, is he? Is that where he's gone? I'm not seeing him kicking around. But seriously about Rolte, him and you and him were the sort of the witness linchpins around the whole, you know, you two were the face and the driving force behind all that, or publicly anyway, the administration time and dragging the club and keeping the fans on side through that. So I guess it must be sad to see him leave in some ways.
Yeah, it was. I and many others would dispute that he helped in admin, but never mind. I'll let him say that. No, me and Rolte have worked together for a long time. Do you know what I mean? I've known him for a long time, and to be quite honest, me and him probably a thorn in each other's side as well. We've got a bit of a love-hate relationship. I was the first person when he had his heart attack back in the day. James Rule had him working in the shop, had him doing all sorts of stuff, and it was a Friday night, and I'm about to have my Chinese on a Friday night, and Dom Smith rings me and tells me Rolte's had a heart attack and he's in hospital. And it was a horrible night, horrible experience. And you know, I've had so many laughs with Rolte over the years, over different things. He's a passionate witness supporter, and when he told me that he was leaving, or he wanted to leave, obviously you got it, because you know, you've been through so much together. And you know, I think both of our agendas are the same in that we just want the best for Widnes. Do you know what I mean? We've always supported Widnes, and you know, obviously he's significantly older than me, so he's come from a different era kind of thing. But you know, he was fortunate to see more success than I saw.
Yeah.
You know, in my lifetime. So yeah, it's sad. You know, he's moved on. He's doing a bit of work for a medical company. I think he's selling PPE and stuff like that.
He'll be quidding. He'll have a villa in Barbados and forget Spain.
Exactly, mate. I don't know how passionate he's going to get about that. I don't know whether he's tweeting about that as much as he used to tweet about Widnes. But you know, I'd love. I spoke to him before Christmas. We had a good chat, and you know what? I'd love to get him back involved with certain things. I'd love him to be involved with, you know, whether he wants to get involved with, you know, hosting some stuff.
Yeah,
because he was, you know,
he's good at that.
Brilliant.
And he was very prominent. He was very prominent with the academy and the scholarship stuff as well, wasn't he? And the sort of development of youth talent in the town.
Well, he was vocal about it. He wasn't necessarily there, James.
Everyone knew who he was, though.
Well, if you were as active on Twitter as he was, he was. I'll never forget, James. I come to Widnes, and my first title was player performance manager. And I was working with Stuart Wilkinson, who was like the head of the academy at the time, and I was working with him, and it was when Paul Cullen was having, you know, when Paul's wife was really ill, and he was away from work, and so Stuart stepped up to the first team and stopped coaching the academy. And I remember sitting there with Dom Smith and Dave Rolton, and they're saying to me, "Come on, Phil, you coach the academy." And honestly, I'd never coached a team before, James. I'd been a PE teacher, but I'd never actually coached a team, and I was absolutely, you know, bricking it. And these two have got me in one of the boardroom kind of things upstairs, and they've like persuaded me to do, "No, we'll be with you, we'll help you, we'll do this, we'll do that." And we went up to Ulcar on the Saturday, and we had this team, and they were a bit of a ragtag bunch at the time, and we ended up turning Ulcar over, and so I've got to sort of credit them two, really, with persuading me to get involved with the coaching side of things. And I went on then to have like 2 or 3 years of amazing experiences working with young kids and, you know, trying to help them, and it was absolutely amazing. And so I've got to give Rolty and Dom some credit for that. Rolty was always one of them who, like, you know, we'd be in the office and, you know, we'd name our best ever sort of academy team, and it'd be a hybrid of over all the years we've been involved, and then we'd name the worst team or the laziest team, and we'd be up to all sorts kind of things. So yeah, he was always a massive advocate of sort of like youth development. He was always involved with the dev squad. He was always there when we had, you know, when we had academy nights, and you know, there's so many people who have been involved, you know, along the years, who don't get credit. You know, Dave. Yeah. People knew Dave was, Dave was an outgoing, confident, bubbly fellow, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And quite rightly, you know, he got the plaudits that he deserved. Dom Smith behind the scenes does a hell of a lot of work for the club, you know, going out watching games and being on the phone. And then you've got people like Brian Carney, Andy Parl, Eddie Kilgannon. There's a load of them. I'm going to end up missing people out here, but there's a load of them that need giving a lot of credit. But you know, Rolty was part of the furniture, James, and it'll be different when we go back. And he's, you know, he's not like monopolising the office, and you know, all his crap is all over the desk and paper everywhere, and demanding coffees left, right, and centre. But you know, I'd love him in some capacity to remain involved with the club. I definitely would.
Well, hopefully he does, and hopefully if he's listening, he can come on a podcast when the season starts. Speaking of the season, how have you found the discussions about restart, about when the season's going to start? Because obviously it's been a little bit fragmented. I think they announced a date and then it was pushed back. And how difficult has it been?
Yeah, it's been difficult. You know, the uncertainty around everything has been the most challenging thing about all of this. People wanted, you know, they wanted the championship to go back last season because, you know, they wanted to have an opportunity to get promoted, all that kind of. We weren't in that camp. We thought, you know what, finish this season now. Let's see how this pandemic sort of plays out, and we'll come back next year, type of thing. But we're hoping that the season is going to start. I think it's the early in April that we're hoping that's going to be announced. The fixtures hopefully should be out on Sunday, publicly from the RFL. So I think it'll give everything something to look forward to. I think, you know, we've got to make some assumptions here as well, James. That as Premier League football games have been cancelled, Super League games are cancelled. Inevitably, I think, you know, some Championship games will end up being cancelled because of the protocols they've got to work with COVID. Inevitably, some games are going to end up being played behind closed doors. So I don't think when we come back, I don't think 2021 is going to be a normal season by any stretch of the imagination. But I'm hoping that the fans get ample opportunity to either watch us via the Our League app being broadcast, or you know, when it's safe to do so, to be able to return to the stadium and actually watch us playing live.
Has there been any discussions over when clubs realistically think they're going to be able to see fans in the stadium, or is that just impossible?
I think it's impossible at this stage to say. I think, you know, I think there was a lot of clubs hoping that April would be behind closed doors, and then we'd be returning to some level of supporters, whether it's 2,000, whether it's a percentage of your stadium capacity. But in all honesty, you know, we really don't know. I think it's a case of seeing what the infection rates are like, seeing the impact that the vaccine has on the population. But I think, you know, ultimately, I think that the positive is that we will be back playing, and there will be an opportunity to, as I say, either watch us sort of remotely or watch us live. You know, yeah. I'm hoping it's the latter.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as it can possibly be. But you know, we've got to sort of pull together, weather the storm for this year, and then I think 2022 will be the year, hopefully, when we get going properly again.
Well, yeah, we'll move on to something else now, but I was thinking, obviously, relegated in 2018, admin in 2019, COVID in 2020. Looks like COVID's probably going to have a big say on 2021. It'd be nice to have as a witness fan or a witness person, it'd be nice just to have sort of a normal year where we just think about playing the rugby as normal. And
mate, I won't know what to do.
Yeah.
ourselves, will we?
I mean, it takes me quite nicely into my next question, the coaching situation. So, sort of in both pre-seasons that you've had as chief exec, you've had to look for a new coach. I mean, how frustrating has that been, and how have you found that?
Oh, it's been really frustrating. You know, I'm not going to lie about it. It's really difficult. It's such an important position within the club. It's frustrating to have a coach, or think you've got a coach, and then they resign. I don't want to get into the details too much about the two sort of situations that we've been through, but you know, with Kieran Pertil, you know, let's have it right. We got relegated. We were looking for a coach. You know, at the time, I'm meeting different people with James Rule.
Yeah.
Right, and I'm having conversations. I had no idea what was less than 6 months down the road, what was coming around the corner. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
So I'm meeting with people, and like, in hindsight, you look back and you think, do you know what? They must have thought I knew. They yeah. must have thought I was in all this. And so we're meeting these people. We met Kieran and different people. And Kieran came to the club on it was a one-year contract. And he came to the club. We were going to be full-time, or we were full-time. We had the parachute payment. And the intention was to try to get promoted. Now, it's a tough ask because Toronto were in the league at the time.
Yeah.
It was going to be a tough ask, but we were training full-time. We had Gelsey who was coming over. Liam Hood had come. Adam Tangata. So we were excited about the season. And, you know, we brought some staff in as well. And suddenly, you know, the rug gets pulled.
Mm.
You know, we go into admin. Like, bear in mind, Kieran had gone through that the year before at Lee.
He'd yeah.
gone through all that uncertainty the year before. So the only thing that sort of is a bit of an issue is that he re-signed with us in the summer of that year to go again with us, and then decided to resign after that. And so that was a little bit frustrating, or it was a lot frustrating at the time.
Yeah.
But the witness that Kieran joined didn't end up being the witness that he thought it would be. So I have got a level of sympathy and empathy with that situation. In all honesty, I just wish he hadn't signed that contract,
yeah.
That second contract. So, you know, there was that one. And then obviously, you know, at the time, like, I think I've talked about this before, you know, I have that conversation with Kieran. I get a phone call off Justin Harris. I'm in the car, yeah. I've left it up. And he tells me about Tim Sheen, and I just literally, you know, I wanted to like throw my phone out the window. And anyway, you know, that came about. And do you know what? I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't change that, because at that time, that was the boost that we needed as a club. You know, Tim gave us a huge, huge boost at that time. And the supporters got behind him for obvious reasons. You know, arguably, you know, he's like the Alex Ferguson of rugby league, isn't he? Do you know what I mean? And so he came in, and then for Tim, like, gets 5 games in and COVID comes.
Mm.
So, you know, there was a lot of challenges around COVID for, you know, obvious reasons. Tim's a coach. He wants to coach players. So when he resigned, you know, Tim had a 2-year contract. He resigned, and he had his own reasons for resigning, which I know, and I'm not... James, I can't get into it because it's not right to talk about these kind of things. But I respect, you know, we respect his decision, you know, for resigning. But it left us in a situation where we had to find a new coach again. So obviously we started that. That was only in I think November we started the process of looking for a new coach, and this time round we did it different. You know, I wasn't walking around like Manchester City Centre going to coffee shops meeting lads to have a chat about, do you want a coach witness and like that, you know. Obviously Tim Sheens didn't need an interview, do you know what I mean? I think Tim had done enough in his career to justify, you know, why we would give him a job.
He was interviewing you, I heard.
if you'd ever, I think you have actually spoke to Tim. Getting a word in edgeways with Tim is very difficult.
No,
do you know what I mean?
To be honest, I am absolutely gutted, I must say, on a personal level and a professional level, that he only coached five or six games, whatever it was. Because I remember speaking to him, I think it was at Championship launch last year, and I interviewed him and bits and bobs, and then it rarely ever happens when you finish an interview and the person carries on talking to you. and like, literally, I must have been talking to him, and asked Sam about this. I must have been talking to him for another half an hour or something afterwards. And I don't think he'd cottoned on, because obviously I was there in my Love Rugby League guys, and he was a bit like, so where are you from? Because he was amazed at how much I knew about how they'd been playing and the pre-season and stuff like that. And every time I seen him after that, I used to have a great chat with him. And yeah, I must admit, I still am gutted, to be honest, because I think it'd have been fantastic just to see what difference it would have made, you know, longer term. I mean, did he know about the academy going? Was that after?
No, he knew. He'd been part of those conversations. You know, it was genuinely a shock. It was a shock to me. Do you know what I mean? It genuinely was.
And I guess another issue is obviously the player recruitment. Certainly at that time, all the announcements had all been, we've come to play for Tim Sheens almost. You know, I'm not saying they wouldn't have come to witness if Sheens wasn't there, but he was clearly a big draw in that. And so, did you have to have any awkward conversations with players and stuff after that happened?
No. What I've learned over the past couple of years, and to be fair, it does stem from being a head of youth in an academy as well, James, because if you go back to what I said at the start about, you know, running things in a moral way and with integrity, when you're dealing with someone's child, right, and they're looking at you, right, to sort of give their child an opportunity in life, if you like, right, you cannot bullshit them. You cannot tell lies to them, because it's their kid. They know about their kid. So you've got to do things in quite an objective way, demonstrate evidence, you know, why they're getting better, why they're not getting better, what they need to do. So I got very accustomed to having honest conversations with people and giving information that people didn't necessarily agree with. So that was a really good grounding for me personally. And so when it came to sort of speaking to the players, there was Paul Clough, Lee Jewett,
Matt Cook,
Steve Tyra. So I rang them all up, you know, personally, and had a conversation with them. But what you've got to remember, James, is all of those players were playing for multiple clubs, multiple coaches, seeing people come and go. you know, seeing coaches that they really like leave to be replaced by other people and all that kind of stuff. So they're very experienced lads. You know, so whilst it was a shock to them,
they understood.
They've been brilliant. Like, no one's throwing the toys out the pram. The existing group, to be honest, there wasn't a reaction. There wasn't a reaction. Like, I will always, if there's any announcement going out, whether it's Tim or the academy or whatever it is, I'll always make sure that the players get an email filling them in just before it goes out, so nothing comes as a shock to them. Do you know what I mean? They're not hearing it secondhand, so they always get that. And when I sent the one about Tim, I was expecting my phone to be ringing, and it didn't. Mm. Existing players didn't. They didn't ring me. You know what I mean? I spoke to Jack Owens. He's the club captain. I'm really close to Jack, Danny Craven, and you know they were fine with it. I think if you're at Widnes, James, right, and you've been at Widnes for a while, you're probably used to
some. So obviously, yeah. You were sort of telling us how you came about Simon Finnegan, I guess. You knew who he was anyway, but just tell us about that process.
It's very unusual for a club to do what we did, but I think we did the right thing. We put a proper advert out. We got people to apply. And honestly, James, it was one of the most revealing things I've ever done. Because you got people, you would get people who would be pushed to you via an agent, or they get your number and they contact you themselves. And, you know, these are people that are high profile, really good. Most of them have had a really good playing career in the game, but not necessarily been coached. You've been around coaching, but not necessarily. So that was, it was really, really informative.
Yeah.
Like the quality of like the CVs that were coming in, the way they'd been written and all that, wasn't great. I'll be honest, it wasn't great. And I think it shines a massive spotlight on the coach development system, our ability to adequately prepare people to coach rugby league teams. Because let's be fair, you know, you're talking, most coaches will be, they're obviously the face of the club. So from that point of view, the most senior person, outward facing person, they're involved in an awful lot of very, very significant decision-making processes. It's not just coaching; it's a leadership and management role. Do you know what I mean? So, we got about 25 applicants. Some of them were just chances. Honest to God, we had like people. We had a couple of people apply that had never coached rugby. Never actually coached rugby. Just said they were supporters and. So, but because they applied, you've got to go through that process. We had some overseas people apply for the job, and we ended up interviewing. And obviously, I can't say who we interviewed for confidentiality reasons. But we ended up interviewing three people. I had a number of conversations with people that were interested in the job. That's what I said I'd do. You know, if they wanted to speak about it further and get more details, I'd have a conversation with them. So. To be fair to Simon, like he contacted me pretty soon. You know, he was in a job at Newcastle. He explained to me that he was happy at Newcastle, and that Newcastle is a good club. And I agree with him. I think it is a good club. But he feels like, you know, he classes himself as a Widnes lad. You know, even though he's got that droney Australian accent,
yeah.
But, you know, classes himself as a Widnes. I think he's been in Widnes now longer than he was in Australia. You know, and he said to me, that's the job that I want. You know, I want a coach at Widnes. He wasn't unhappy where he was, but he didn't want to pass that opportunity up. You know, and I had a few conversations with Si, and actually, you know, I knew Si a long time ago because he lived, for a period of time, he lived with Paul Devlin in a flat up at Upton Rocks, and I was really, really friendly with Paul Devlin when we were younger, so I knew Si from back there. But you know, I wouldn't say I was, you know, close mates with him. I wasn't in contact with him, but I knew him. And so when we interviewed him, we were looking for someone who was really, I know it sounds daft, this James, but someone who was really, really enthusiastic about the job. We wanted someone to display an enthusiasm for coaching, because ultimately that's the job. You know, you got Si's got 26 players at the minute at his disposal. His job is to get the very, very best out of those players. A lot of those players are working in the day. You know what I mean? They're working in the day. Some of them have got manual jobs. Some of them have got office jobs. They come to training. He's got to infuse them to want to get better. Do you know what I mean? And Whiteside, it came through. It came through in his interview. What came through was he understands Widnes as a town. I think he understands what the supporters expect, which was really important, because I don't think, you know, I think if you've not lived in Widnes or you've not played for Widnes, I don't necessarily think you get it. I would say this, but I think Widnes is a really unique club. You know what I mean? It's this club that's got so much expectation on it, which is, you know, comes from the past.
Yeah.
So you come to Widnes, and it's still, I mean, I think we discussed this, that we're still in the top 10 most successful rugby league clubs of all time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So the job comes with a lot of pressure. So we needed someone that could cope with that pressure as well, and understood the pressures that would come with it. And we did a proper interview process. So they had to apply. There was a short list. They came in and they got interviewed, and I'm sure he wouldn't mind me saying, but he turned up and, Jesus Christ, he's got a pair of jeans on, a shirt, no tie. Like, you've got Roger Harrison on the interview panel here, so you can imagine what Roger's face was like. But ultimately, you know, he's not, you know, we're not interviewing him, he's not Gokwan kind of thing.
Yeah. So maybe he was just dropping the hint that he needed some new stash or something like that. Maybe that's what it was.
Maybe. And to be fair, he's obsessed with stash. That's one of the questions that I repeatedly got from him after he got the job. When's the kit coming? So, yeah, they never changed, players or staff kind of thing, from that point of view. But, no, he did a proper interview, which, honestly, James, I've no doubt he was uncomfortable doing. But if you want to be coach of Widnes, right, if you want to be the head coach of Widnes, then you've got to, I know it's a cheesy cliche what I'm going to say now, but you've got to get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because it's a tough job, and the journey that we want to go on, it's going to get harder.
Yeah.
It's going to get harder. If we're going to progress, we need the right person. So, we offered him the job, and, you know, he's got a 2-year contract. And you know, I'm looking forward to, hopefully, James, some stability. You know what I mean? I've got no axe to grind with people that have left the club at all. Do you know what I mean? We're all different, we've got different circumstances. You know, I want this appointment to work. I want it to work for Simon. I want it to work for the club, for the fans, you know, and the players. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you mentioned the players. There's 26. You announced the squad numbers this week. Is that it, do you think, in terms of starting the season, or is there any further signings on the horizon?
Well, it's probably it for now. We've always got, you know, we've always got your eye on the market kind of thing. To bring new players in now is difficult, because when you do your cash flow forecasts, and they're based upon attendances and people coming through the gate and hospitality and everything else, obviously that's gone at the minute. That's all gone. So we've got to be very, very careful that we don't overcommit ourselves. We've got to be really careful that, you know, we don't come unstuck by thinking, you know what, we're okay at the minute, so I'll tell you what we'll do, we'll go and get two or three more players. I'm sure Simon would love to have more players. I'd like to have more players in the squad. But where we are at the moment, we're happy with the squad. As I say, there's 26 of them. One of the things that you've got to understand as well is we've got a partnership with Warrington Wolves. You know, Carl Fitzpatrick, who's the CEO over at Warrington, I've known for a long, long time. In fact, me and Carl played for England schoolboys together, and we were both scrum halves, and we had a half each. He couldn't split us kind of thing, so we got a half each against France.
He played a lot more Super League games than you managed, though.
Well, he did, yeah, but I saw the light, didn't I, earlier? He didn't see the light and didn't have any other alternatives. So he didn't have a choice. He just carried on playing for Salford, which, you know, no disrespect to Salford, but anyway, he did play a lot more Super League. To be fair to him, he's done.
Yeah, he's done well. Yeah,
he's done unbelievable. He's done unbelievable to get where he is, and I have a great relationship with him. And the challenge that someone like Warrington have got at the minute is, they've, you know, naturally before COVID, you commit to contracts. You don't see COVID coming from, you know. So you've got lads on 3-4 year contracts. There's no reserves next year. So we're working quite closely with Warrington in terms of looking at, can we facilitate some of their players coming to play for us within the confines of the COVID protocols and stuff. They've probably got a handful of players that they need, genuinely need to get game time at a decent level, being coached in a decent environment, a decent facility. So when you look at that squad, there could be a few more coming in there that may be made available. There's nothing concrete at this moment in time, but you know, Steve Price has been involved in the conversations. They trained at Warrington all of January. They trained over at Widnes on a Tuesday and a Friday, because our facilities are obviously really good. So they came in and trained there. So the relationship we've got with them, you know, is a really good one. So hopefully we'll be able to get some players in from Warrington this year.
So what you're saying is we might see Greg English play for Widnes this season. That's a potential.
he's got to get in front of Jake Spedding.
I mean, I know that. I mean, obviously, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that pans out. I know they've loaned a couple players out, haven't they already? But I guess the COVID situation makes it difficult to facilitate that at the moment.
Yeah, but as I mentioned before, there's lateral flow testing has been introduced now, which changes the landscape a little bit. Now we've still got to work through all of that, but you know, you can obviously have a test and find out the results relatively quickly. So that may sort of loosen the restrictions a little bit, and obviously as the vaccine kicks in, and that's honestly, James, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Like every single, like, we've been planning our season tickets. We're hoping to get the season tickets out on sale before the end of this month.
Yeah.
But absolutely every single detail that we've had to go into, in years gone by, you wouldn't even have had to think about.
Yeah.
There's things that we've had to think about that, you know, are completely new to everyone. You've got to think about every possible scenario that could play out, which I think long term, I think is going to help the sport, because it's forced people to think differently about things. So yeah, from a squad point of view, as I say, we've got 26 players in there. There's a couple of lads that have stepped up from, you know, obviously the academy. Dan Hill is a player, you know, not single, you know, this is Simon's job, but I'm going to, you know, Dan Hill is a lad that's come through our academy. Like you know, listen, I still love obviously the rugby side of things and seeing people, you know, develop. And Dan Hill is one to watch out for. He's an unbelievable talent. He turned, when I talked about sort of like first pick players, he is one of the only first pick players we've ever sort of been able to recruit. He's a Wigan fan, lives in Newtonley Willows, played for the Hornets, and he had all of the Super League clubs in the Northwest chasing him, and he decided to come to us. So Dan's, I think he's 19 now. He could have a really, really big future in the game. So he's one to watch out for. And, you know, naturally, you know, I can understand some of the supports thinking that, you know, the depth in the squad and all that kind of stuff. But listen, those lads, and I'm a big believer in this, those lads, they don't let you down. When you give them an opportunity, like Callum O'Neill came and played again on Good Friday against Lee, right? He did not let us down. Do you know what I mean? Matt Whitley made his debut against Warrington. I was like, who's this kid? He comes on and he absolutely banjo Ben Westwood. Do you know what I mean? Like, you give these kids a chance and they generally don't let you. I mean, JJ let us down at Wembley, obviously. You know what I mean? But generally, they do really well.
He also got sent off in the semi-final, didn't he, as well? Or Simbin early on, Johnston, in that cup run.
Who was he fighting with? Who was he getting battered by?
I don't know, it was quite early doors and we only had one hooker and it was him and he got Simbin, but I mean it all turned out well in the end. Mention obviously you know, with the academy situation, a decent recruitment strategy is potentially signing academy products that have been elsewhere, and obviously that's something that you've done with Adam Lawton. How did that one come about, and are you pleased to see him back?
It's an interesting one, that. I've got to be honest on this one. Right, so me and Adam obviously go back a long time. Adam is just honestly, Adam should be in the NRL. That's where Adam should be. Right, I've never seen a kid do some of the things that Adam Lawton, you know, could do. He could pass a ball 30 metres off his left, off his right hand. He could kick 40-20s for fun. He could kick goals, you know, from all over the pitch. And our environment, and you know, you look at it and you reflect, you think, you know, did we treat him in the right way? Did, you know, were we too hard with him? Were we too soft with him? He was just so frustrating. I mean, the glimpses that we got from him when he played Super League, I mean, I think he scored 3 tries against London. He scored like a 40-metre try. I think it was against, might have been Hull KR or Salford, and he ended up diving in at the corner. Like, the lad is a... he's a standoff trapped in like a giant body. Do you know what I mean? And to be fair to him, you know, he's a rugby player. Adam's not an athlete. You know, you look at some of these lads, and you know, they could go on the front of GQ. Do you know what I mean? They're in the gym all the time. The diets are perfect. All that. So Adam's not one of them lads. You know, he's a rugby player. He likes playing rugby. Do you know what I mean? He's the kind of kid that you go playing 5-a-side footy. You're probably the best player there as well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if he was in the 80s, if he'd been brought up in the 80s, he'd have been a, you know, he'd have been a Great Britain player. You know what I mean? And what I'm buzzing about with Adam coming back is, you know, he recognises that now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
so he's got a few points to prove.
Yeah, he has. And you know, I hope he does it with us. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's obviously been away from the club. He went over to Australia and, you know, lived his life, I suppose, over there for a bit. Come back, he's got 2 kids now. He's got 2 kids. You know, travelling up to Newcastle must be, you know, difficult for someone who you work in the day and you got kids and that. So I can't wait to see him playing again. You know, I spoke to Jack Owens last week and I said, come on, how's he getting on and that? And he said, honest God, Phil, he said, sometimes you just have to stand back and just admire him. Do you know what I mean? Like, so yeah, it came about, obviously Simon coached him. I don't know, he was on loan from Salford at Newcastle, or he'd signed permanently, I can't remember now. But Simon had coached him a bit, and obviously Simon had played with him at Widnes as well.
Yeah, back in
so he knew him as a lad. You know, I think, you know, I had a decent relationship with him, and it was just before Christmas. So, you know, Si brought it up. We were looking at strengthening in sort of like the back row. And you know, Adam's name came up, and you know, I'll be honest, there's some reservations, you know, in terms of, like, you know, is he gonna apply himself as much as he possibly can and try and fulfil that, you know, massive, you know, potential that he's got. And the only way we're gonna find out is by giving him an opportunity. And when I say we're looking for a second row in Adam Lawton, you've got genuinely someone, James. He can play second row, he can play loose forward, he can play prop. The kid could play standoff. Do you know what I mean? He's a freak in terms of his skill, tactical understanding and awareness. And you know, he's got a great relationship with Danny Craven that goes back years. So you know, if you think about, and I don't know, again, I'm straying into areas that don't belong to me here. But if you imagine Danny Craven on the left with, you know, Adam Lawton outside him, and then you know, Jack Owens coming out the back, and you might have Dion or Jaden on the wing, like that's a difficult edge to try and defend against that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to seeing him. I hope all the fans are as well.
Yeah. Did you have any conversations with the lads that had gone to Ottawa? Obviously we lost quite a few players that had signed for Ottawa, and then of course Ottawa decided to jack it for this season. Was there any conversations had with any of them players?
James, I was absolutely fuming with that situation. I was fuming with it, and I'll tell you why. I was in the summer of 2019. We went to Salford, and we all sat there, and we had to listen to this. And I'll be honest, an absolutely ridiculous presentation from New York, and then a ridiculous presentation from Ottawa. And then bear in mind, like, what's going on with Toronto at the time, and they weren't a proven concept and all that. And I'm sitting there, listening to this, and at the end of it, they saw, you know, vote whether you want to have expansion with Ottawa or New York and all that. And the vast majority of the game are sticking their hands up to vote for it because they're thinking of this mythical broadcast deal that's going to come in and flood the game with money. And I'm looking at it from a different point of view because obviously I'm pretty new to that role as CEO and all that. I'm still looking at it from like a player's perspective, player development. So they asked us to sort of justify why we've didn't vote or the way we did vote. And I just said, well, because you're just going to come and you're going to rob all of the players from this country. You're going to inflate the market over here, you know, and then they'll be discarded as you move up the leagues. You know, you'll discard them and you bring someone else in. And no, we won't. We're going to have Canadian players playing. We're going to have our own academy and all this. And it's like, yeah, sound. Lo and behold, 12 months later, my phone's going, oh, listen, Phil, Ottawa are interested in Sam Wild. Ottawa are interested in the Twins. And to be quite honest, the sell that they were giving the players was to be full-time. To be full-time and come on this journey with us. Bear in mind, James, what is happening with Toronto at that time. You know, and these lads are being, you know, obviously by their agents, are not being warned off. So at the time when these lads are signing for Ottawa, they've got no training ground. We're in the middle of a global pandemic, right? They don't know where they're going to play, right? And they're signing for a Canadian team. So I'll be quite honest with you. Part of my rationale on this was, listen, if you think that that's a good move for you, well, go for it. Go for it. Like, but I'm not going to compete because we're not full-time. So if that's something that you want, we can't offer you full-time. So thanks very much. You know, you move on. And the finances as well. Some of the finances were, in my view, were overinflated. Similarly to the Toronto situation, you know, there was a lot of players on big money to get them to go to Toronto. So I'll be honest with you, when it hit the fan with them, I was furious. I was absolutely furious because, you know, I'm not saying all of those players would have stayed in with us, but Sam Wild was a player.
Almost like a fan's favourite, Sam Wild as well.
Yeah, and he had a good connection with Danny Craven. He's no bother off the pitch, Sam. Do you know what I mean? He gets on with it. Very durable as well. Like, I can't really remember Sam ever missing games. He's always available to play. So yeah, Sam was one who you know we would have liked to have kept. But then obviously we've moved on.
Yeah,
we've moved on. And I think, you know, to be fair, and this is no disrespect to anyone, but Matt Cook, really, really experienced player, really good lad as well. Don't hear spoke to Matt, but really intelligent, really, really nice lad kind of thing. So he's come in. Cluffy, you know, you forget how much experience Paul Clough has got. When you look at it, it's outrageous, you know what I mean? The Grand Finals, Challenge Cups he's played in, players he's been around, you know, he's really, really experienced. And then Lee Jewett's experience as well, and adds a bit of, let's be fair, he adds a bit of dog into that middle, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He doesn't mind having a scuffle, Lee. I'm not condoning that, by the way,
before I get
done by someone.
It's interesting, Paul Clough as well, because I can't remember what year it was. Obviously, he's been at Widnes before, and he sort of just like disappeared and fell off the radar. I think it was him and Paul Johnson who were, you know, around that time. At Widnes, the pack was quite mobile, and they weren't the biggest, but they had a lot of players that were similar shape, and they rotated, and he just sort of almost like disappeared off the face of the earth, and then next thing rocked up at Huddersfield or wherever it was.
Yeah, he was on loan, wasn't he? He was on loan from St Helens at the time. I know I wasn't involved, you know, at that level at the time with any of those discussions, and I think, you know, some of the players that have been allowed to leave Widnes in the past, it baffles me. You know, what I mean, the big one for me, and you know, I'm, you know, he's one of my best mates. He's Willie Iser. Like, he was allowed to leave Widnes and replaced with Satamata Sarr, and like things like that just baffles you. Paul Clough. As I say, I wasn't involved in any of that at the time, but I know he was on loan from Sterling, so he may have. I think he left and went to Bradford, didn't he?
Yeah, he went to Bradford initially. Yeah,
and then he went to Huddersfield. So I really don't know how it came about, but he is massively experienced, and you know he's another one of them. I think a bit like Logan, I think Paul made the decision that he wanted to be part time because he works in. You know, like a financial advisor kind of thing. I think that type of thing. So he's doing that now and looking forward to sort of the next chapter of his life after rugby league. So he's a local lad, fits for us, fits for him, and I think he'll add a hell of a lot of experience to that group.
Great. And before I let you go, Phil, there's just one last thing that. Just want to have a quick chat about the Super League situation and obviously the bid process that saw Lee get promoted to replace Toronto. the club, I'm not sure whether the club were actually eligible to apply, because there was, it was a bit of a grey area about the financial situation and stuff like that. But just discuss that, you know, what were the discussions held around the club about that Super League opportunity?
To be honest, James, there wasn't an awful lot of discussion around it. You know, I speak to, you know, Chris Price, who's our chairman. I speak to him every single day. You know, he's absolutely, honestly, he's a legend, Chris. Like,
he sent me a message. He sent me a nice message actually after you mentioned the article I wrote a while ago, before Christmas. Yeah. He sent me a nice message after that, which was good of him.
He's honestly, I don't know where him and Joanne, his wife, like, she'll kill me for giving her a name check on this, but the amount of time and effort that they put into the club is phenomenal. It's absolutely phenomenal. You know, I genuinely don't know where he gets the energy and the time, you know, to do it on top of running, you know, Landscape World as well. So, I had a lot of conversations with Chris, and when it comes up, you think, oh, do you know what, you know, could we apply? Mm. And we made the decision not to apply. We aren't ready. We're just not ready to be a Super League club. And, you know, bear in mind, James, that Lee are going to get £1 million versus 1.8 or whatever it is the other clubs are getting. Like, Derek Bowman, you know, fair play to Derek Bowman. He puts, from the outside looking in, it would appear that he puts a lot of his own money into the club. We're not in that situation at this moment in time. And to be fair, I'm really happy with that type of ownership at our club, because what it does, James, it forces us to really get the business how it needs to be, rather than having someone pouring money in that masks and papers over the cracks.
Yeah.
It's the wrong way, I think. And I think the way it's going, there may be a significant reduction in central distributions. Clubs have got to be able to wipe their own faces and less reliant upon either a sugar daddy or the money that's coming in, you know, from Super League. And I'm not being critical of that model, but with that model, there's also there's always that threat, isn't there, of what happens if that fella or that group of fellas, what happens if they get fed up and just walk away? Where does that leave that club at that point? So the model that we've got is different. You know, what we're trying to do is make sure that we develop a very varied range of revenue streams that aren't necessarily associated with on-field performance. So trying to develop streams of income that are stable.
Brilliant. Phil, I think we've covered everything there. Thanks very much for your time, and hopefully we'll speak to you later in the season. So I hope you enjoyed that interview. Please do drop me a tweet at JDG Sport if you want to give some feedback or comments on that. Please do also feel free to ask questions or leave comments on Audio Boom, iTunes, Spotify, wherever it is that you listen to this podcast. If you can leave a review and some 5-star reviews, that would be great as well. Thanks again to PD Law Solicitors, Arnold Gorse Financial Management, Whistle and Parklands for their support of the podcast. I've got some belting episodes coming up in future. In a fortnight's time, I've got Kevin Brown on the podcast as he talks about his exit from Widnes, his time at Widnes, and has a bit of a message to the fans following his controversial departure, shall we say, a few years ago. And then in episode 3, I've got Willie Iser. He's coming on the podcast to chat about his time at the club. We'll possibly have a few other bits and bobs to talk about as we look towards the first game of the season as well. But for now, that's all from me. Speak soon.